नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So today, reading from Canto 2, Chapter 7, Scheduled Incarnations, Text 42. Is that right? Yesham sa esha bhagavan dayed anantaha Sarvat manashrita pado yadi nirvelikam Te dustaram atitaranti cha deva mayam Naisham mamaham iti dhisva shrigala bhakshaye Yesham sa esha bhagavan Word for word Yesham Unto those only Saha The Lord Eshaha, the Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead, Dayayet, does bestow his mercy. Anantaha, the unlimited potential. Sarva Atmana, by all means, without reservation. Ashrita Padaha, surrendered soul. Yadi, if such surrender, Nirvyalikam, without pretension, te, those only, dustaram, insurmountable, atitaranti, can overcome, cha, and the paraphernalia, deva mayam, diverse energies of the Lord, na, not, esham, of them. Mama, mine, aham, myself, iti, thus, dhi, conscious, shva, dogs, shrigala, jackals, bhakshe, in the matter of eating. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Translation. But anyone who is specifically favored by the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, due to unalloyed surrender unto the service of the Lord, can overcome the insurmountable ocean of illusion and can understand the Lord. But those who are attached to this body, which is meant to be eaten at the end by dogs and jackals, cannot do so. Translation responsively. But anyone who is specifically favored, by the Lord, by the Supreme Lord, sorry. The personality of Godhead, due to unalloyed surrender unto the service of the Lord, can overcome the insurmountable ocean of illusion and can understand the Lord. But those who are attached to this body, which is meant to be eaten, at the end by dogs and jackals, cannot do so. Purport. The unalloyed devotees of the Lord know the glories of the Lord in the sense that they can understand how great the Lord is and how great is His expansion of diverse energy. Those who are attached to the perishable body can hardly enter into the realm of the science of Godhead. The whole materialistic world, based on the conception of the material body as the self, is ignorant of the science of God. The materialist is always busy working for the welfare of the material body, not only his own, but also those of his children, kinsmen, community men, countrymen, etc. The materialists have many branches of philanthropic and altruistic activities from a political, national, and international angle of vision. But none of the field work can go on beyond the jurisdiction of the misconception of identifying the material body with the spirit soul, unless, therefore, one is saved from the wrong conception of the body and the soul. There is no knowledge of Godhead, and unless there is knowledge of God, all advancement of material civilization, however dazzling, should be considered a failure. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shilakya Chakshurunmiltam. So here it's being mentioned that without being favored by the Lord, without getting the mercy of the Supreme Lord, one cannot overcome the illusory energy of the Lord. So one cannot overcome illusion without being favored by the mercy of Krishna. And that is the sum and substance of Krishna consciousness, to get the favor of the Lord. So by any other means, we cannot overcome the material energy. And we obtain the favor of the Lord by unalloyed surrender unto the Lord. That's the process. So this verse is summing up the whole process of devotional service is being described in a nutshell, how to overcome the illusory energy. So only by sincere surrender unto the service of the Lord can one achieve the favor of the Lord. And then one can overcome illusion. And those who are attached to the material conception of life can hardly get a glimpse into devotional service. So that's what this verse is about. So we can see that how all of us are overcome by illusion. So this illusory energy of Krishna is very powerful. As Krishna himself says in the Bhagavad Gita, Daivi Esha Gunamai Mama Maya Duratya. Yeah. That the living entity is overcome by the three modes of nature. And these three modes of nature, they're called gunas. So it is like a rope. So we are very tightly tied by the three modes of nature, by these ropes. So we can see sometimes when someone is bound by a rope or bound by ropes, if they're very tightly tied, it is very difficult to undo it or unentangle it. So one needs the help of a person who is not entangled. So in the same way, these three modes of nature, goodness, passion and ignorance, have binded all the living entities from the topmost planet to the bottommost planet of this universe. Everyone is entangled by the three modes. Even Krishna says in the Gita, in the 18th chapter, that no one is free from these three modes, from Brahma down to the Indra Gopa. Everyone is tightly bound by these three modes. So because we are bound by the three modes of nature, every living entity is thinking that they are a product of matter, or they are this body. So this is the illusion. The illusion is that we are thinking we are the body, and we are meant to satisfy, the goal of life is to fulfill the needs of the body, fulfill the desires of the body, and in that way we can be happy. So this is the program of material life, and this has been going on from time immemorial. But the problem is no one is happy. That's the problem. The problem is we are trying to satisfy the body. We are thinking we are the body and we are trying to find happiness. And this propensity for sense gratification is not only in the human beings, but is in all species of life. So whether an aquatic or a plant or a human being or an insect, everyone is trying to be happy. And the way we are trying to be happy is by lording it over nature. That's what Prabhupada explains. We try to be happy by this propensity of dominating nature. Or that means trying to have control over others to whatever degree we can. The more the better. So in that way we see all living entities are trying to do that. But the problem is none can be happy because we are falsely imitating Krishna. So we are part and parcel of Krishna. We have the same qualities as Krishna, but quantitatively we are very insignificant. So when the jiva is trying to be Krishna and trying to imitate Krishna in that way, trying to derive happiness, that's not possible. So in this world, that is impossible to derive happiness like that. So this happiness is by the imitation of the Lord. So this material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. it is said that it is a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. Just like we can see a perverted reflection in a body of water. So there's trees, branches on the banks. And then if you look in the water, everything is upside down. So in the same way, this material world is a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. And it is in the 15th chapter, Krishna gives an example. He gives the example of a banyan tree. So he says, Urdhva Moolam Adarshaya. Shaka. Adarshaka. So he says that this material world is based on this desire. And this Krishna gives the example of this banyan tree where the branches are down and the roots are upward. So it is upside down. So this, in other words, this material world is a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. Because in the spiritual world, Krishna is the center and everyone is Krishna's unalloyed servant, serving Krishna in full harmony. But in the material world, everyone pretends that they are not the center, but they are serving others. But in reality, everyone is trying to serve their own senses. And that's what Prabhupada says here. The materialist is always busy working for the welfare of the material body, not only of his own, but also those of his children, kinsmen, etc., etc. So primarily, everyone is trying to satisfy his own body. There's different states of consciousness. There's Annamaya. So Annamaya means living entity is only interested in eating. And we can see that in the animals. All they are interested in is eating. Their consciousness is focused on eating. They're always thinking, when is my next meal? Or where can I hunt? Where can I find my prey? So they are meditating on food. So some people are like that. All they think is just eating. And then some people are higher than that. Their mental faculties and intellectual faculties are more developed. So they are thinking about governance, law and order, helping others, poetry, artwork. In this way, their consciousness expands a little bit. But it is all in relationship with the material body. It's all in relationship with the body. So Prabhupada even, he explains that there's different kinds of philanthropic works. So there is personal selfishness and there is extended selfishness. So personal selfishness is about just thinking about oneself. One can't be bothered about anyone else. Just, it's all about me and how I can be happy. We don't care about the environment or others. It's just about me. How I can fulfill myself and how others can satisfy me. Then there is extended selfishness in which some people, they think about others. So it begins with one's family. One's immediate family members, then extended family. And then that extends to one's neighborhood, then one's state or nationality, then even the whole planet, then different species on the same planet, and maybe even the universe. We don't see that much so much, but we do see about welfare for the planet. But again, that is in relationship to oneself, because one is thinking, how can I be happy if everyone is bombarding the planet? Then how can we have sense gratification? So we need to protect the planet so we all can have sense gratification. So though everyone pretends they care about others, but actually they're caring about themselves. So one might say, how by thinking about the welfare of other living entities, that's being selfish. That's also being selfish because one usually desires something out of that welfare work. So if one might not desire any facility from that, but one might desire prestige from that. So generally, people say, I'm such a munificent person, I've done so much charity, I've done so much welfare work. So they want to be recognized for their philanthropic activities. And if they're not recognized, they feel offended. So in this way, the people do want something out of their philanthropic activities. And above that, all that philanthropic activity is simply based on the bodily platform. It's got nothing to do with the real self. So all that activity is ultimately a futile endeavor. And Srila Prabhupada gives a very simple example of a man drowning in a river. And so someone jumps in the river and tries to save him. And in the process of saving him, he just takes out his coat and pant and says, "I've saved the person." But that person is not saved because he hasn't saved the person, he's just saved his dress. So all this philanthropic work is simply saving the dress of the person. And that is also futile because eventually the body has to perish. And they haven't done anything for the soul. So in today's society there's gross ignorance because they have no idea of what the real self is and what to speak of what God is and what to speak of having a relationship with God. So they are, today's society is in total darkness. So the real welfare work or the highest welfare work is to distribute Krishna consciousness, is to distribute knowledge of Krishna. So, and when people come in contact with Krishna consciousness, then they can do the greatest good to themselves and to others. Because that's how they can overcome this illusory energy. So as Krishna says, this illusory energy is very difficult to overcome. Because we are very tiny. Because we are Krishna's part and parcel, but we are his minute part and parcel. We are, in Bhagavad Gita, it's explained that we are 1/10,000, the tip of the hair. That's the dimension of the soul. So we can see how tiny we are. We are only 1/10,000, the tip of a hair. That's our real identity. But Krishna is unlimited. Krishna and his energies are unlimited. So because we are so tiny, and Krishna's energies are unlimited, so his illusory this illusion or the external energy is one of his energies. And it can overpower us because we are very tiny and it is unlimited. Though it is inferior, though the illusory energy is inferior, it is not a superior energy, but because it is Krishna's energy, it's called Daivi. And it can overcome us because we are tiny. So that's why we are put into bewilderment, because we are very tiny. But if we take shelter of Krishna, then we can overcome Maya, because ultimately Krishna is more powerful and Krishna controls the illusory energy. It is under his control. Because Krishna says that all these energies are under me. They are working under my direction. Maya dakshina prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetunena kaunteya jagat viparivartate. This material energy is one of my energies, working under my direction, producing all moving and non-moving beings. So because it is Krishna's energy, if we surrender unto Krishna, Krishna can withdraw its influence because he's the controller of it. And that is possible when we serve Krishna in full surrender. That's what's being mentioned in this verse. That when the living entity fully surrenders unto the service of the Lord, one can overcome it. So what does it mean by surrender unto Krishna? That surrender is described also. There's six aspects to that surrender. So if we don't understand what surrender is, how can we surrender unto Krishna? So surrender just doesn't mean raising your arms up. Someone points a gun and you say, "I surrender." So then we raise our arms up. So that is that kind of surrender is basically based out of fear. You know, one is fearful, and then I'll do whatever you say. But Krishna is not referring to that type of surrender. There's a different type of surrender. So that surrender, even Krishna says in the end of Bhagavad Gita, that give up all types of religion and just surrender unto me. And if you surrender unto me, I will protect you from all reactions. Do not fear. It's a very famous verse. So in that purport, Srila Prabhupada explains the meaning of surrender. So surrender means to accept things which are favorable for the discharge of devotional service. That's number one. To understand things which are favorable for the discharge of, and to reject things which are unfavorable for the discharge of devotional service. And then to firmly believe in the Lord's protection. The one is fully convinced what it means that Krishna is my protector. It's not my own abilities or my own capacities or my credit card or bank account or, you know, the government will protect me. But ultimately it's Krishna who will protect me. And he will not only protect my body, but what he's referring to, he'll protect my spiritual life. And then to feel exclusively dependent on the mercy of the Lord. That one feels fully dependent. I'm fully dependent on Krishna's mercy. And that's what's being mentioned here. And to have no interest separate from the interest of the Lord. And to always feel oneself meek and humble. So this is what it means to surrender. It's not very easy. I can see for myself, I'm failing in all the six items of surrender. Because by nature, we have been in the material world from time immemorial. And the reason we have come here is to rebel against the service of the Lord. So we want everyone to surrender unto us by these six means. But this is what it means to surrender unto Krishna. And it takes a lot of effort to reverse this cycle. That it takes a lot of effort and sincerity and dedication to surrender unto the service of the Lord. It is interesting, it's mentioned here that due to unalloyed surrender unto the service of the Lord. So surrender is not a sentimental thing. One says, you know, I'm surrendered unto Krishna. We know Krishna, I'm surrendered. But if someone believes in God, then they will accept his service and render service unto him. Otherwise, there's no meaning to surrender if there's no service. Otherwise, it is all sentimental. And we can see this in the pastime of Lord Chaitanya when he met Prakashananda Saraswati. So Lord Chaitanya, he was engaging in chanting, dancing and playing instruments and singing. And Lord Chaitanya was externally you could say he was one of the Mayavadi sannyasis, because he took initiation from Keshava Bharati. And the Bharati is they are one of the Mayavadi sannyasis. So like Saraswati, Ananda, Tirtha, these are like the titles of Mayavadi sannyasis. So the Saraswati, Ananda, Tirtha, they are like most exalted. And Bharati, they are inferior sannyasi, but they are part of the Mayavadi sect, of the Shankaracharya sect. So Prakashananda Saraswati was a Mayavadi. So the Mayavadis couldn't understand that. They thought he's a Mayavadi. He's taken initiation from Keshava Bharati, who's, you know, part of the Shankaracharya sect. So they thought he's a Mayavadi. So Mayavadis are supposed to study Vedanta. They're supposed to sit and study all day Vedanta and speculate. And they couldn't understand why Lord Chaitanya is chanting, dancing on the streets and singing and playing instruments. So they thought these are all sinful activities. They said these are all sinful activities. And the Lord is not educated. And these are all sentimental activities. These Vaishnavas are sentimentalists because they have no education. They have no idea of Vedanta. And they're simply doing these childish activities. And they are distracting everyone else. So they criticized the Lord a lot when he was in Benares, when he was going to Vrindavan and Mathura from Jagannath Puri. So they all criticized him. And their followers also criticized, and the householder devotees' followers also criticized. So when the Lord was returning on his way back to Jagannath Puri, he stopped at Benares and he stayed at Chandrasekhar Acharya's house, who they labeled him as a Shudra. Though he was a Vaidya, he was from a Vaidya background. A Vaidya is a Brahmana. But a Vaidya is basically the father is a Brahmana and the wife is a Shudra. So they labeled him as a Shudra and they were criticizing him for living there, and he was having meals at Tapan Mishra's place. So then And they approached the Lord and said, you know, you're being criticized heavily. You should do something about this. And then by the arrangement of the Lord, one Brahmana came and invited the Lord for lunch. And he implored the Lord. He said, please come to my house for lunch. I've invited all the sannyasis of Benares. And now you also have to come. He said, though I know you won't accept any invitation, but please come. Then the Lord accepted. So he wanted to speak with them. And when he went there, he washed his hands and he sat down near the sink. It's not a very clean place. And then when he sat down, this effulgence was emanating from him, like this is Brahma Jyoti. And when the sannyasis, they saw that, they were all astonished. They thought, that's Narayan. And they went there and they said, why are you a sannyasi? Why are you sitting down here? Come and sit with us. So Prakashananda Saraswati, he took Lord Chaitanya's hand and he pulled him and he brought him in their assembly. So there they asked him, you look like Narayan, but your activities, they don't correspond to that. You look like Narayan. They said, your activities, your singing and dancing and chanting and playing instruments, these are all sinful activities. And how come you're engaged in that and you don't study Vedanta and you don't associate with us? You know, we are your god brothers. We are part of the same family. Why don't you associate with us? You're just hanging out with all these sentimentalists. And then Lord Chaitanya said that actually my spiritual master, he said that I'm a great fool and I cannot understand Vedanta. So I need to chant, I just simply need to chant this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And by chanting this, I'll attain all perfection. And he said, just because I've done this, I've gone mad. And my spiritual master has confirmed my madness. And he said, this is all right. So we can see that, and then basically Lord Chaitanya was instructing them that the point being made here is that if one is not, doesn't have any austerities or penances, if one is not humble, one cannot chant the holy name or study the Vedanta Sutra. And if one does not accept a spiritual master and does not follow his instructions or carry out his service, then one cannot understand the conclusion of the Vedanta, which is Vedaisha Sarvair Aham Eva Vedyo. The whole conclusion of studying the Vedanta is to understand Krishna. And not only understand him, but to engage in his service. So if one does not carry out the service or the order of the spiritual master, then one cannot attain the favor of the Lord, as it's being mentioned over here. So that favor of the Lord is attained by accepting a spiritual master and carrying out the service he has given us. So for all of us, our service is unique. Everyone gets a different instruction from one spiritual master. So everyone gets a service. And when we carry out that service wholeheartedly, with these six principles of surrender, then we can hope to attain the favor of the Lord. And only then we can hope to overcome this illusory energy. Because by our own efforts, we cannot cross over the illusory energy. That's what the Mayavadi sannyasis were trying to do. They thought we can study the Vedanta because we are so intelligent and we are a sannyasi, so we can sit and study all day. And by doing that, they think they are liberated. So there's this nice verse in the 10th canto where Lord Brahma says that people who think they are liberated, they are not liberated. Is this? Yes, so here, in the 10th canto, 2nd chapter, verse 32. Ye anye aravindaksha vimukta maninas, tvai asta bhavad avishuddha buddhaya, aruya krichrena param padam tata, padanti adho anadrita yusmad angriyaha. There it says that those who think that they are liberated, according to Mayavad philosophy, but who do not take to the devotional service of the Lord, fall down for want of devotional service. Even after they undergo the severest types of penances and austerities, and even after they sometimes approach the supreme position. So these Mayavadi philosophers, they were thinking that because they're studying the Vedanta and they're so intelligent, and they can control their senses, they are liberated. But one who doesn't have service, they'll fall down after some time. So one who's not strongly attached to the service of one spiritual master and who's not getting a taste out of it, after some time they'll fall down. They'll lose interest in devotional service. So that's even very much applicable to us. And here it says that those who are attached to this body, which is meant to be eaten at the end by dogs and jackals, cannot understand the Lord. So in the Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami says that those who are bitten by the snake, or those who are the witch of bhukti and mukti, someone who is bewildered by bhukti and mukti, they cannot understand Krishna. So bhukti means material enjoyment. One who identifies with this body and who wants to enjoy. Even if we want to enjoy in Krishna consciousness, we want to the service of one's spiritual master is secondary and one's own agenda is primary. If someone who is bewildered by bhukti, material enjoyment, and someone who wants liberation, they cannot understand devotion, they cannot understand Krishna. So they are just simply licking the bottle of honey from outside. They cannot derive any taste from Krishna consciousness. And it's interesting, it's mentioned that we are so attached to this body, but this body is meant to be eaten by dogs and jackals. So the body is ended in different ways. So for some people, some of us, it might be a cremation. We might be cremated. For some of us, it might be a funeral. Our body is burnt. But maybe it might be we die in a plane crash or something, and then our body is eaten by vultures and eagles, or it's eaten by dogs or fish. If the plane crashes in the ocean, then we might be eaten by sharks or fish. And then the body will simply turn into stew. Because when they'll eat it, it's food. When we eat food, it comes out as stew. The body takes the nutrients, and then the waste product is stew. It's eliminated. So when these living entities will eat a body, it will become, stool, or worms might eat it. If we are put in the ground, we're buried in the ground, then worms will eat our body. So our body will end up as worms. Or if it's thrown in the streets or, ends up there somehow, then jackals and vultures will eat it. But the point is, the body came out of the earth and it will go back into the earth. And that's the end of the body. But in the interim period, we get so attached to this body and we decorate the body in so many ways, put on different types of clothes, perfumes, this and that, and we get attached to the body. And anything which we temporarily possess, we think we have proprietorship over it for the rest of eternity. So in this way we are so attached to the body. But here such a statement is being made to detach us from the body. So all these negative statements in the Shastra are there to break our attachment, because we are so strongly attached to this body and everything in relationship to this body and to this world. So that's why in the Bhagavatam such strong statements are there to cut our attachment. So a sadhu means heavy, or a guru means someone who's heavy. So these statements are made, and we see so many spiritual masters that come, they're so heavy, they're very cutting. Prabhupada also used the cutting technique. And Srila Prabhupada's own spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, he was known as the lion guru, the Simha guru, because he was so heavy. And they used to just, they cut our false ego. So such statements, they chop off our false ego, at least temporarily. So, and if we read, so that's why it's recommended we read these books regularly, Because when we read these books, we'll naturally stay humble. I mean, we could still get proud, you know, after reading also. I know so much. We can still get proud. It's easy to get pride. But if we, the idea is if we read these books, we it will keep us humble. And humility is one of the six items of surrender to the Lord. So because, as Keshava Prabhu was mentioning on Tuesday, if one is not humble, one cannot chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. And as Lord Chaitanya, he says in his Shikshashtakam, that Amanina Manadina Kirtaniya Sadahari, that one has to be very humble and tolerant like a tree. Then one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. So these, by reading this, the negative and the positive, one can stay humble and one can develop service unto Krishna, by which we can cross over the illusory energy. So are there any questions on this? Or comments? Yes, Prabhu.
First of all, we welcome Vaishnava.
Thank you.
About Prakashananda Saraswati Thakur, the ultimate thing was the, those Mayavadi, they were also chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare.
Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, 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 Ram.
So Mahaprabhu naturally converted all of them chanting. That's very important thing.
Yes.
So we visit there for most fruitful.
That's right. The reason the Lord took sannyas, before the Lord was a householder, and he saw that many people were escaping from his net of bhakti. The agnostics, the atheists, the mayavadis, some of those sannyasis, they were running away from, they were escaping the flood of love of Godhead. So he thought, how can I drown them in this ocean of love of Godhead? So then he took sannyas. Because when one takes sannyas, everyone pays respects and everyone wants to hear. Even today, what to speak of back then when the Vedic culture was much more prominent. So
the
then...
The point was very difficult situation for Mahaprabhu at that time to leave the house. With your mother and very beautiful wife.
Yes.
And there was no place to look after them.
Yes.
Still, for sacrificing for all of us,
Speaking about Mayapur Dham, I had the good fortune of getting a tour of the TOVP. Our dear Sri Radha Vallabha Prabhu, he's over there. He's doing very nice service. He's working on the design of the TOVP. And it's coming up very nicely. The superstructure is almost complete. And they're working on the dome, the main dome. And then there'll be a chandelier in it, which will weigh 12 tons. So the dome has to be strong enough to... It will be a concrete dome which will support the chandelier, which will house the structure of the universe. That's what Prabhupada wanted. And Lord Narasimhadev will be in one side, in one dome. Another dome will be the planetarium wing. And Shivaram Maharaj, he was giving a class. He said that Prabhupada made these statements that, you know, go and kick on the face of the scientists. With their boots, kick on their face. Because they're cheating, they're misleading people by their false propaganda. So Shivaram Maharaj said that this TOVP is a kick on their face. This is Prabhupada's kick on their face. Because this will depict the Vedic understanding of the universe. So this is a big preaching. This temple itself is a huge preaching. Because it will explain the whole, how it will have the material understanding of the universe and the Vedic understanding. And there will be so many dioramas, so many, there are two levels on it, two floors. They are just museums and they are huge. They are massive. It spans from the gate till the temple. There's just two levels, just museums. So this is an amazing project. And they were encouraging all the devotees to go back to the yatras and to make this project happen. So we should all try to contribute in whatever way we can for this project, because it's a very important project. Srila Prabhupada wanted this project to be established by the hands of every devotee. It's not only a Mayapur project, but it's a whole worldwide ISKCON project. So you can go on their website and you can watch a video they made in February, which explains how much progress they've made and their vision, how they're progressing.
In fact, you can see that video in our theatre all on Sunday.
Yeah, we should do that.
We should edit it.
Yes. Evil, okay. Yeah, Krishna says in the Gita, what's that verse? Aham sarvasya prabhavo. Yeah, iti matva bhajante man buddha bhava samanvita. Everything, both material and spiritual, emanate from me. The wise who know this engage in my loving service with their full hearts. So yes, everything is coming from Krishna. Krishna is the source of everything. Greed, anger, lust, sex desire. Everything comes from Krishna. Everything so-called good and bad of this world emanates from Krishna. But when everything emanates from Krishna, it is in its pure form. But when it comes in touch with matter, it becomes perverted. So in the spiritual world also there is envy, there is greed, there is cheating, there is pride. So all these things in the material world have a destructive effect. You know, pride. Even so-called goodness, it's got nothing to do with Krishna. So everything in one sense is evil in this material world. But everything comes from Krishna because Krishna is the source of everything. And through Krishna, it's in its original pure form. For example, there is greed in the spiritual world also. So that greed is the qualification to achieve Krishna's mercy. So devotees are also greedy in the spiritual world or in a temple. This is also the spiritual world. So there is greed for Krishna's service.
Lolium.
So that kind of greed is good. That kind of greed doesn't put down others. In the material world, greed means I'll enjoy at your cost and you'll have to suffer. Someone has to suffer for my enjoyment. That's how it is. One man's poison is another man's food. So in the spiritual world, all these things are there, but they're in perfection. And it doesn't put down anyone. And everyone is encouraged by seeing others greedy for Krishna. So envy is also there. They're envious of other devotees' service, but not in a bad way. But they also want, they pray that I can also do as good as them for Krishna's pleasure. It's like that. Here it has a destructive effect, but there it has a very constructive effect. So the Adiras is there in Krishna, but here it's also there. It takes a perverted form.
There is something called cheating in this spiritual world.
Cheating?
Yes, an example, illustration.
Just thinking in Krishna Leela. Do you have anything in mind? Usually you have the answer. Yeah. It's all the time cheating. And anything else? Yeah.
Actually, on that question of evil, there's a conversation of Srila Prabhupada with the law enforcement officer. And Prabhupada's discussing the problem of evil in this world. And then Prabhupada mentions that that evil is actually the absence of God consciousness. Just like darkness is the absence of light. It does not exist at its own. If there is God consciousness, there's no question of evil. So evil is actually just the absence of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise evil cannot exist. So he says, just
that's like a good point, yeah.
Darkness cannot exist at its own. It has to be in the absence of light. So if there is light, and then Krishna, he says that verse, Krishna Surya Sama, and he says, we are making everybody
That's a very good point. Thank you.
Yeah.
Even Prabhupada's back to Godhead. What is it?
Nescience
and Godhead is light. So that's a very good point. Yeah, thank you. Okay. Yes. What I've heard from my seniors is to have a prayerful attitude. So when we have a prayerful attitude, then we are naturally dependent on Krishna. But when we don't have a prayerful attitude, then we think we can do it on our own. That's what I've heard. So we can see Srila Prabhupada, he had a very prayerful attitude, and he would pray to the Lord that protect him from falling into Maya. And he said, the one problem with my disciples is that they're not fearful of Maya. In other words, they're not very prayerful. Their dependence is not there. Okay.
So, is this Krishna is the source of evil indirectly because the absence of
Godhead, spiritual knowledge. Well, Krishna doesn't want evil here. He doesn't desire evil. But it's only because we forget Krishna, then we end up in this evil mess. But Krishna doesn't desire. Everything, whatever comes from him is good. But it is simply because of our lack of connection to him. So we are the cause of evil, not him. Because we have disconnected ourselves from him. But if we connect ourselves to him, then there's no question of evil. Even while being here. Because we are seeing everything as energy as separate from Krishna, meant for us, for our enjoyment. And that's the root cause of all problems. So we are the cause of evil.
Yeah. Okay, so
yeah. No, because Krishna wants everyone to be his servant and enjoy. He's saying in Bhagavad Gita, you know, he's coming to teach that, and he comes as Lord Chaitanya. Takes the role of a devotee to teach that. But because we forget him, as it's mentioned, if we forget his service, then we end up in evil. We are the cause of it.
He mentions specifically, that there in the Bhagavad Gita, specifically mentions that it is the root cause of ignorance, which is the call of lust, and then it's just all downhill. Mm. And the liberty is given to us to exercise freedom. If we were to go that way or this way, exercise our choices. If we want to do that way, we have a certain result. If we go this way, we'll have a certain result. The liberty is granted to us. So that's what he's mentioning, that ignorance is the root cause. And that's why he's saying there is nothing better in this world than this culture of transcendental knowledge. That's what he's saying in the fourth chapter. There's nothing more sublime than this culture of knowledge. Because it frees you from all evils. All secondary issues, everything troublesome.
In simple words, the material world is full of duality. You will not realize the value of something if you don't understand something.
Yeah. So that's why what spiritual quality everything is from the Lord, not as a source of everything. But with having the importance of both, you realize the value of it.
That was a But that so-called good is also bad. It's not actually good. It's good in our perspective, but in Krishna's perspective, all is bad because material world is against the service. Everyone in the material world is against the service of the Lord. So, from Krishna's perspective, it's all bad. From our perspective, there's good and bad. That's Yeah, Krishna's perspective, our thinking good and bad is all bad from Krishna's perspective. But we think certain things are good, certain things are bad in relation to our sense gratification.
Because Iksha Desh,
yeah. from Krishna's, yeah. So Prabhupada said, it's all bad. Yes, Madhuri. Absence of the sun is darkness. So Krishna is not the cause of evil, because our rebellion is the cause. Because Krishna had to create this material world for us. I mean, because we wanted it, so he had to create. But it's all Krishna's energy. In that sense, it's all good. But our thinking good and bad, that's an illusion. Because that thinking is all bad, because if we see everything in relationship to Krishna, then it's all good. Otherwise, that so-called enjoyment is also bad because it's causing us to take birth again and again suffer. So it's all bad. Eventually, it's all our conceptions of so-called good and bad are bad.
Because it is rooted in ignorance of our eternal relationship with Krishna.
Yeah. Okay, we need to end here. You can ask me personally. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.